Brain Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
Could you whisper in my ear the things you want to feel? I'll give you anything to feel it coming. Do you wake up on your own? I wonder where you are. Is it with all your faults?
Dedicated to Montana Man because he's fragile.
Up where you are. I won't say anything at all. So I don't cry.
And joining me from the great state of Texas, Mike Musselman.
Yeah.
From the great state of Minnesota,
by the way,
via the state of California.
Who's not fragile.
No, he just goes to the hospital all the time. He's sick in quarters, but he's not fragile, just so everybody knows. You're a China doll, man. You break easy now. You're like Joe Mauer, always on the disabled list. However, on a positive note, somebody with a concealed carry permit last night intervened in what could have been a pretty bad incident in Oklahoma. Did you see that?
Yeah, shot the guy right outside.
Killed him. Yeah, yeah. Guy,
yeah.
What?
I wouldn't. You know, I don't know. If, I mean, if guy came out, I know he'd just been shooting people. The last thing I'd probably say is drop your gun. I would just pop him. You know? Not my fault.
So how does that legally work? You see somebody, you intervene. Do you, you're not a cop, though. I mean, so.
No, but you could, so it comes as, man, there's a lot of feedback. Let me call you on the other number.
No, okay. All right.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Why is there feedback? They're both configured the same. This is irritating me. It's the second time you said that. Normally, all right, he's back.
Yes, much better.
Why, Mike, I'm looking at the board, and the two lines are configured the exact same way. I don't understand.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't get it.
And the other line was the one that you said a couple months ago, like, yeah, this one's much better. But that was before I had to get my phone replaced because I fell off my bike on it, and they replaced it, and now it's good to go. So, anyway, go ahead.
I bet you it's because it's bugged. The government has bugged your phone.
Okay, hold on. We're talking about the concealed carry thing in Oklahoma. What is legally? It's you're defending yourself, right? And so he just shot people, and now he's armed. And
no, you're not. Well, it would be. This is kind of that. It's in defense of others. So, in Texas, here in Texas. A person is justified in using force or deadly force against another to protect a third person. That's how it's written in our penal code. So reasonable belief that the intervention or immediately necessary. So that it's the reasonable man theory that right. comes up is if a person reasonably believes that the intervention, I'm trying to immediately necessary to protect the third person from the commission or attempted commission of a crime. You know, and it's got to be one of the big five. So murder, aggravated kidnapping, sexual assault, aggravated sexual assault, robbery, aggravated robbery, or home invasion and carjacking. So, you know, in this case, he's applying deadly force in defense of others. Yeah, you can make the argument he defended himself, but I think both apply here.
I'm with you.
You know?
I agree with you.
But in doing that,
you're not a cop. You don't have to say, hey, like Joe Friday would say,
no,
drop your weapon.
No, because one thing they're going to have to figure, one thing that the court has to realize, the grand jury, is do you have a lawful purpose of being there? The answer is yes. Then you have the lawful right to defend yourself or those of others. So it's got to be, you know, that there's a step process. So you do you have a, is there a reasonable understanding of why you're there? Well, it's a restaurant. It's a public restaurant. Okay, so that answers that question. You know, if it was private property and you're trespassing, there it would get a little sticky.
Right.
So, you know, it's a step process. Do you have a license? Yes. Is it current? Yes. Okay. You know, they're going to take blood from you.
Right. All of that.
Okay. They're going to make sure that you are not intoxicated. You're not in the influence of anything. They're going to take your gun, and that's just a formality because they got to make sure, even though, I mean, that's what you had. And then they're going to have to answer those questions in the grand jury is, did he have legal reasons to be there? Yes. Did he fall into the five? Was it self-defense or defense of others? You know, in this case, you could argue both. And then what are the five categories? Murder, you know, kidnapping, you know, the whole nine yards. And it'll play out. And then the grand jury, you know, he's still going to go up in front of a grand jury.
Right.
And then the grand jury, 9 times out of 10, in this case, probably 10 out of 10 in Oklahoma and like that, they will no bill him. So it'll be a no bill, meaning that you're not acquitted because you weren't charged with anything. But basically, there's not enough evidence that proves that you were, you know, culpable in the taking of that person's life. Now, the stupid thing about this whole thing is, like I tell people, is you may be acquitted on all charges, criminal charges, but that doesn't still save you from the civil liability. So they can get you for a civil court because this is how stupid the country is. We have these activists and these groups. You violated this individual's civil rights. No matter if it's Jeffrey Dahmer or Ted Kaczynski or the most heinous person in the world, they have a right to exist just like you. And when you intervene, they take that right away from them.
But they don't have the right to take other people's lives. And so we're not saying that, Max.
You're right. They don't. But you don't. But they have the right to be here as well.
But not if they're just as much right to be alive on Earth. But not if they're killing people.
Only then. What 13th Amendment, right? We convict them. We take away their rights. So that's what they lose their rights. They're a convicted felon. They don't have the right to vote. They can't do these kind of things. You know, they lose some rights while they're convicted. But that's much later down the road. But he's not convicted. You know, again, up until the time where the foreman read the whatever the decision was on Kaczynski, he was innocent, man. Right? This is our courts. We're innocent until proven guilty.
Whatever.
Remove all reasonable doubt. So
yeah, but I just don't understand.
In the legal world, it's alleged.
Right.
He didn't.
Okay,
didn't
Mike. But I don't understand. I don't understand the civil suit. So criminally, you don't get indicted because, as you just said, you go down that checklist, had the legal right to be there, you know, had the weapon was registered and gone through the training.
So you get no bill for that.
And so then,
from the grand jury.
Right. So then the guy's family sues you.
Then you get a knock on the door and it's this guy's family's lawyer that's now taking you to court for violating his civil rights.
Yeah, I don't get that. See, here's the, that's just it.
Like, that's why we have
that law. But they can't win that lawsuit though, Mike. Because
they win it all the time.
How do they? Then shouldn't the victims of the crime be able to sue them the exact same way? Like so before our beloved father was killed by Mike Musselman in the parking lot of Hardee's, you know.
He did sue you for anything.
He did kill his girlfriend or did shoot his girlfriend and his girlfriend's daughter But we're not talking about that here. Like, what?
Right.
What?
Yeah. No. But you know, I mean, I could sue you for anything. Slander. Look at slander. You know?
Let's not.
I could file a lawsuit against you for you calling me an idiot.
You can.
You say, what an idiot. Yeah, in public.
I know, but I can.
You have to prove.
I know, but
I can prove that I'm an idiot.
I can prove that.
How?
What?
Because someone says stupid things? Doesn't
yes.
make them stupid.
Yes. What does it make
no.
them? Smart?
But, Max, okay, so this is the stupidity, but this is law. This is what's so fascinating about it, really, and so stupid about it, is, okay, you can prove it. Yes, you can. But up until that point, it's still slander.
It's only slander if you prove that I slandered you, right? And truth.
Well, yeah, here's on the phone.
Yeah.
I got you on video.
I got so much audio.
I record every one of our conversations. You didn't know that?
I've got so much audio of you being stupid. How could I fail to be able to prove that? Okay, here you
right.
go. And we just start like the greatest hits. Okay.
But you know what?
Here's another one.
But then I turn it into a protected class and I make stupid people a protected class.
Oh.
And then we become racist.
True. True.
Right? See where we go with this?
Yeah. Then I'm anti-stupid people, and you're the victim.
Yeah.
Now we're
because
talking.
80% of the world's stupid.
80?
So the majority of us are, yeah. Well,
okay.
People out there become stupid, right?
Speaking of stupid, before we came on the air, we were talking about the president speaking on Memorial.
Oh, God.
He's horrible.
Oh.
He's horrible.
I had it in the background, and I'm sitting there, and I was in the kitchen doing something, and I could hear him, you know, and it's like, oh. You know, when you really like somebody, you know, like I said, you know, when I worked for General Nicholson, I really liked the guy. I admired the guy. He's just a fun person to work for. He's just a great guy, right?
Right.
But every once in a while, he wouldn't say the right thing at the, you know, you're like, oh, you kind of cringe for him. You're like, oh, you shouldn't have said that. You know, now people are, oh, you know what I'm talking about? You know,
yes.
They don't always pull off the best speeches. There's sometimes they knock you out of the park, but most of the time, you know, they get kind of sidetracked. They kind of lose their place of where they were. And you're like, oh man, here it comes, you know? But every time Trump talks, that's how it comes across. You know, and especially military guys, because he can't relate. He's never served. Until he's been the president, he probably never even shook the hand of a military guy. And I don't fault him for that. I don't. I could care less. But when he's talking about, you know, I promise you that we're going to be the strongest military because, boy, by golly, you know, other countries, they fear strong militaries, and we're going to have a strong military. And I promise you, we're going to have a strong military. And you know, we're going to be just strong in a military. We're going to have a strong military. I mean, it just goes like, oh, God. Over and over and over. You know, and I've been in that situation. You know, you're sitting there in your blues in a chair, and you're just waiting for the guest speaker to get done.
Yeah, please. Then hopefully you're not at the position of parade rest as part of whatever ceremonial detail isn't there as this guy goes on. And
that's why I never went to those things, man. People asked, did you go see when Obama came down to the airfield Camp Pendleton and talked in the hangar? No, why would I do that? When everybody went, you know where I went? I went home. I left. You know, it's 1 o'clock in the afternoon. By the time they got back, it would have been 4. I'm done. I'm not going to play this game. But I'm not going to go stand there and listen and play the, yeah. When dignitaries or anybody else would show up, where did Gunner go? I went the 180 degrees the other way.
Worse though is the poor sons of bitches that are in formation while these speeches go on and on and on. What is funny?
Like when Harry showed up.
Oh my God! What is funny though is when you have to be part of that, and you're standing there, and now they're across like a parade deck from you, and so you can talk. Oh, yeah. You can talk freely amongst yourself. I mean, and nobody, yep. nobody's moving
You're
their
whispering.
Head. Yeah, everybody's like, everybody's in formation. Everybody's head pointed the forward, right? And all of a sudden, you hear from behind you, "Somebody tell this son of a bitch to shut his pie hole."
Yeah,
because my shoulders are about to explode. And you hear this, yeah. then this conversation begins, and it's hilarious.
Yeah. Oh, man, where's Weaver? What platoon is Weaver in? He's going to go down. I bet you he's going to go down. He went down last time we were standing on here.
I know.
He's going to lock his knees. Yeah.
Is he down yet? Getting ready to.
Yeah.
He's weaving. I'm standing right behind him. You hear this shit. Tell me about Katy Perry.
Yeah. So Katy Perry does her music video on Camp Pendleton. I don't know which one it was. It's the one that she joins the Marine Corps, runs away, cuts her hair off, and joins the Marine Corps.
Yeah, that one. Have you seen it?
Yeah. But one of the series was shot in the pool at First Marines.
Mm-hmm.
That was pool shot at First Marine Regiment.
Right.
You know, where she's dunking one of the instructors, or she's doing like a headlock, because I don't know what the hell part of swim qual that is, you know? Yeah, what step in that swim qual is putting someone in a headlock? So she's in there, and it's cold. I mean, it's not a very great day in Camp Pendleton.
Right.
So they're doing over and over and over. And the guys that are in that pool were my guys that worked down the pool. They're the swim instructors.
Right. Hey, and the girls that were in that pool, the female Marines, were my female Marines from the battalions of one men's headquarters group. Right.
MLC.
Right.
Yeah.
And the captain was a girl that was like the OIC of that debt that went down there that got formed to support this, is a girl from New Jersey by the name of Lisa Orocho, who's like,
I know who she is.
Lisa's kind of a badass. She was ready to beat the shit out of Katy Perry.
Yeah. And she wanted nothing to do with Katy Perry after that.
And Katy Perry's in a wetsuit, and the rest of these Marines are all in the water. And it, as Mike said, it wasn't warm either.
Oh, no. It was cold that day.
And Katy Perry,
she had a wetsuit, and she would show up late. So the Marines were all in the pool waiting. And so then she'd show up. Dry as a bone, out of a robe, she'd come out, she'd jump in the water, do whatever, jump back out. And then if they had to do a retake, they'd go dry her off, bring her back, and then the Marines would still be in the pool. I mean, it was like, are you kidding me? I mean, I was furious, dude. And then when that scene down in Red Beach, when they're jumping out of the LAVs and all that stuff, you know, she had her own little trailer. You know, she'd sit in her trailer. It was drizzling out that whole day. And again, it was cold.
Right.
And, you know, the Marines are sitting out, and it was like a little makeshift mount town, you know. Just, it had like a 53-foot semi-trailer with windows cut out to mimic buildings. And they had to sit in there. That's steel. You know, so it was like, and then she'd come out and do this thing and, you know, all that sort of. And one of my guys actually asked her, you know, so after he's doing all this stuff with her, and he's the one that's getting wrestled, you know, and they're talking and stuff. She's acting all really pretty. And then he goes, you know, my daughter is a real big fan of yours. Would you mind doing an autograph? Not right now. What? You know, like, what?
What just happened?
How long does it take to sign your name? And I'm sure you have, you narcissistic bitch, you probably have a file folder full of photos of you. You know, that's what my comment would have said. If I would have been like, hey, my daughter wants to signature an autograph. Oh, not right now. You mean you narcissistic, you know, and I'm sorry to use the B word, but I was thinking of a W word, but that would have came across bad.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. So, yeah, and because I don't like her. I think very little of her. If anything at all. And she's, but that was reminiscent again of her, and that's the way she is, and that's the way she's probably brought up and the way she thinks. But, you know, on the other thing is Heather Locklear, you know, beautiful actress. She came to visit Camp Pendleton, and, man, she was the most gracious person you've ever met.
Really?
Really. I mean, oh, Matt, she was.
Isn't she in the news? Because she snaps. She snaps and, like, goes off, right?
She's a fantastic person. And all she wanted to do was ride around the LA Beats. Yeah, she's a good person. I mean, you could tell, you know, people that had got their heart in the right place.
Heather Locklear.
Who's the little guy that played Sniper?
The guy, he came to Afghanistan.
Yeah.
Right?
He's kind of a jackass.
He's from Boston. Well, what do you expect?
Well, yeah.
Donnie, what's his name?
He's Marky Mark.
Yeah. I can't remember his last name.
Mark Wahlberg.
Wahlberg.
Not Donnie Wahlberg, Mark Wahlberg.
His brother's Donnie.
Yeah.
What? So
he's kind of an ass.
Was he?
Well, he didn't talk.
Yeah, I didn't. You know? I didn't.
We went to lunch with him, and he's just kind of like, well.
Where'd you go?
He's a little guy, man. He's a little guy.
Where'd you go to lunch with him?
Camp Dwyer.
He came to Afghanistan and spoke to the Marines and all the rest of that stuff, and I didn't.
Because he was doing a movie about a fighter, or I don't know why he was there, but.
He was going to release a movie. But he's done veteran stuff for a long time. So.
No, you know who's a class act guy, and I met him twice, is Lieutenant Dan.
Oh, man. He's like the patron saint for it, the Gary Sinise. His foundation.
Gary Sinise. That guy.
That guy's legit.
So legit, yeah.
He comes from, born and raised in a military family, and then you can't pick up the paper without seeing something he's done. Hey, let me, speaking of guys like that, Jay, we talked earlier in the week, but J.J. Watt.
He's a great guy.
Yeah, he'd be governor of Texas if he wants to. He just does good shit. You know, it stands in stark contrast with
to a Colin Kaepernick.
Yeah, to that whole the national anthem thing. You know, you want a way to make a difference? Find a way to make a difference. You don't need to act like a jackass in front of everybody. If you're that concerned about social justice, get out there and show everybody. I mean, J.J. Watt raised almost $40 million for the people of Houston. And then, last week he announced it. And without any fanfare, there was no press conference. I think he just put it out in a tweet. Or I don't even know that he put it out. Somebody put it out. J.J. Watt has informed us that he will pay for every funeral for the 10 students that were killed and the 10 people that were killed.
Yeah.
10 students. And that's it. And he's never held a – so, I mean, if you want to make a difference – you can make a difference, and he's a great example of it. But you have these people like Katy Perry they came back. Let me tell you, the girls that supported this, the female Marines that supported this, they were up and on a bus at like 5:30 for 3 days supporting her video shoot. And I want to say at the end, she spent 5 minutes with them. And they came back.
No, not even that. No, she spent,
and they were like,
she said thank you, whatever. Shook her hand, and walked away.
Yeah. They were like, whatever. Lisa Rocho, she's got a bulldog named Chesty. I said, okay, that's a little much. Can we dial down the motivation? But she is a, if you hear a Brooklyn, Hispanic Brooklyn girl being a Hispanic Brooklyn girl.
Yeah.
That's what Lisa is.
She's got attitude.
She's got
attitude.
She's got a chip on her shoulder from yesterday. And so she came home, and she came back, and they got off the bus on, I want to say, the night they did the after the first day. And I said, how'd it go? And she's like, it sucks. I said, what? Really? And she starts telling me about it. She said, this stupid bitch comes out of her trailer like running like this girl run in a Marine uniform and looks at me and says, how do I look? She said, the uniform looks like shit. She hasn't bloused her boots. And I just looked at her, and then I looked at the costume designer and said, there's no way. It looks stupid. And so they said, well, what do we do? And they said, the name tapes, you know, the name, your name tapes are on the wrong, you know, pockets. That has to come off. You got to blouse your boots and you got to wear it like this, right? Your sleeves are rolled like, you know. And so Lisa just unjacked her shit.
Yeah.
So anyway. And so Mike was at the other end. See, Mike and I have these experiences that we're working.
At different angles.
At different angles of the same problem. And then another one was this green beach. For Steel Knight. Mike's at the beach, and I'm in the One Mess COC, and we're hearing stuff. Well, there's campers on the beach. And I'm like, what?
And the Amtraks are in the water.
And the Amtraks are in the water, headed for the beach. And so I'm talking to somebody on a phone, and I'm like, hey. And then they say, well, there's this guy that just showed up, and he's telling everybody to get off the beach. I said, who is he? He's a gunner. And I said, what's his name? And I don't know, the guy was near Mike, and he says, hey, Gunner, what's your last name? And then I hear, who wants to know? And I'm like, it's him.
Oh, I know that guy.
And he says, it's the One Mess COC. And he says, Musselman. And I'm like, all right, it'll get taken care of. I'm out. And so, that was like, so then I get this phone call. Hey, what's going on with it? I'm like, Mike Musselman's up there. It'll get worked out. Trust me. And they're like, all right. But yeah, so we have these experiences where
Musselman has landed. Everything is in control.
Everything is in hand. Donald Trump though, he was talking yesterday at the Mellon presentation. He repeated himself during the thing. He said, and they get off. They got off the helicopter to the heaviest machine gun fire ever. I'm like,
oh.
It just sounds.
I'm surprised he didn't say they got off the chopper. They jumped off the chopper into heavy machine gun fire,
and then throw a little China. China, the way he says China. He's not a great public speaker. It's a challenge.
Oh, I call it, you know.
But you know what, Mike? He's gonna have an interesting experience this weekend because his chief of staff. This is a rough weekend if you're a Gold Star family. You know, you have to deal with all the fanfare about this weekend, and depending on where you're at in your menstrual cycle.
I stay away from it, Dave.
Right? Exactly.
I don't let it get.
But see, Donald Trump is going to get a chance, probably maybe for the first time in his life, to look behind that curtain and to see a guy who's not saying a whole lot, right? Who doesn't really feel like talking about it.
I don't know if he could pick that up, though. I mean, I don't know if he's, you're giving him a lot of credit.
I give him at least that much credit because to me, even the dumb amongst us, when you're aware of it and you begin to watch, you see that and you're like, he's going to get he's going to have an experience that he's never had in his life being around John Kelly.
So speaking of
China,
I have a joke, an ongoing joke about, so whenever you see it says made in China, right?
Yeah.
Made in China. Yeah. I always make a joke and say, it's China, Illinois. And they're like, what? And I'm like, yeah. It's not China. There's a place called Illinois. It's a city, and it's called China. It's pronounced China because they didn't like it because it's spelled the same way. They don't like the way it's portrayed. But I said, that's China, Illinois. You know, it's a joke, right?
Right.
Well, apparently, one of the people I was talking to took it as I was being, you know, like, that was truth. So it came back to me one day. I ran into another person. They're like, dude, did you tell... You know, I won't use his name. Did you tell Tom that there's a place called China, Illinois? And I was like, what? Oh, yeah. You know, and I looked at him like, you know, maybe he was going to pick it up. Like, yeah, it was stupid. He goes, dude, we were looking for it on Google Earth. There's no place called China, Illinois. I'm like, Are you serious right now? And yeah. What do you mean I'm serious right now? No, no, you're being serious right now. Yeah, of course I'm being serious. Brian, you know when I've said that there are no stupid questions? I have come to realize that there are. Because people that are stupid ask stupid questions. That's the truth. You know? And I said, dude, it was a freaking joke. And now it's so, like, they get pissed. Now they realize this has been going on for a month and I've been telling everybody, oh no, because I guess what he was doing at work and people were like, he's like, oh no, that's Sheena. And people were like, what are you talking about, you idiot? Oh, it's China. No, no, it's Sheena, Illinois. A friend of mine told me it's Sheena, Illinois. They get, you know, and people are like,
stupid, just stupid stuff. Listen to this. I had one of those go on in my immediate family with my daughters. We're in the living room, and then one of the dogs starts barking at nothing, like looking either at the wall or something and barking. And then Colleen, the youngest, looks at me and says, "He sees a ghost."
A ghost. Right.
Who told you that?
Right.
Catherine.
Huh?
Who told you that? Catherine told me that. So then, I don't know, a couple days later, you told Colleen that the dog sees a ghost? Yeah, I did. What do you base that on? Okay, well, dogs have great ears, and they can hear things that we can't hear? Yeah.
Yeah.
So if they see something that we can't see, it's because they can see things that we don't, which means what would it be? And you said, it would be that you're stupid. That's what that would be. She's like, no,
so
it's a ghost. I'm like, oh, my.
You want to hear a ghost story that the wife told me the other day, 2 days ago?
Yeah. I love ghost stories.
So, the wife's in there, Megan and me are sitting in the room. She goes, oh, you guys, I got to tell you what happened. Another ghost story in the house. And so I'm listening attentively. I'm like, oh. Yeah. So she goes, yeah. Okay, so I go to bed. And before I go to bed, I plugged my electric toothbrush in. And this morning when I got up, my electric toothbrush was out of the charger and laying on the side of the sink, on the left side of the sink. She goes, but I plugged it in last night because it was low on batteries. And so I let her tell this whole story, and I'm like, oh, she's like, oh. And then I look at her, and I'm smiling. She goes, what? And I said, see, now this is cool about stories because stories don't end when you go to sleep. So I come into the bedroom, and it's pitch black, and I see this bright, flashing orange light in the bathroom. Blink, 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 blink. And I'm like, what the hell is this? So I go over there. And I see there's a toothbrush, an electric toothbrush. So I pick it up, and I unplug it, and I put it on the side of the sink, and I go to bed. She looks at me, and she's like, really? I said, yeah. So how many people did you tell the ghost story to? She looks at me, and she's like, you suck. I said, now you got to go back and tell the truth about the ghost that, again, the ghost turns out to be me. Because she tells me all this stuff like, oh yeah, I went, the butter was left. It was I put the butter away in the refrigerator and I woke up in the morning and the butter's on the counter. And I said, yeah, cause I went into the refrigerator and I realized someone had put the butter that doesn't go in the refrigerator. This is the butter that stays outside of the refrigerator. You don't get this one cold and this one stays outside of the refrigerator and I put it back where it belongs. Oh. They cling to these ghost stories. Like, oh, the ghost. I came home and the ghost had cleaned the whole house. No, that was me. I came home.
Come on,
and
stop it.
The dog had been fed. Yeah, I mean, crazy. I mean, not all the time, but most of her ghosts, all of them so far have turned out to be me.
It's the ghost. So you're a ghost. Congratulations. Here's an email. That's probably a rat in the wall that your dog hears. I agree with you. That makes much more sense to me than he sees a ghost.
Yeah.
But you look at those, you know, those things when they say them to you, you just look like, what did you just say?
Yeah.
All right, here's a text message.
I would love to have a ghost in the house to have a conversation with, you know, talk with.
Yeah. It would be like having a transsexual in the unit. Like, it would be incredibly interesting. Like,
yeah.
Where's Musselman? He's putting on his dress. We're going out on Lubo right now. All right. Well, yeah, you know, just these fascinating pieces of our world that you don't really get a glimpse of. Text message. Lethal force is justified against, quote, great bodily injury and or death upon yourself or others. That's from the California Penal Code. Yeah. So.
Say that again. Deadly force is authorized.
Lethal force.
Wait, what?
Lethal force is justified against, quote, great bodily injury and or death upon yourself or others. California Penal Code. Yes or no?
Yeah, I think that might be worded. I don't know if that's taken right out of the California Penal Code where they just say great bodily injury. You got to define that.
How that would take like 10 books to define.
Well, no. I mean, if I have a rock in my hand, can you shoot me?
Yeah. What are you doing with the
really?
Rock? What are you doing with the rock?
You can do lethal. Yeah, exactly. But you can apply lethal force to me when I have a rock in my hand. Maybe it's my pet rock. Maybe it's my buddy rock. I always go out.
Well,
with.
If you're just walking with a rock, no. But if you're,
well, how do you know
for
that?
Instance, if
you're, I threaten
if,
you,
if you're on top
and I'm
of,
looking at you,
if you're on top
and I'm
of,
mad dogging you,
if you're on top of a Marine colonel in a bazaar in Sangin and you're smashing his face with a rock, I can kill you. Yes.
Well, but I'm in the act.
Okay.
There's a difference.
All right.
So in the act, but. Yeah, you gotta be careful.
If you have a cell phone and you're in Fallujah and you're watching somebody, can I shoot you?
We should pop you all day long.
Right. Is that a death? Is a cell phone?
You were talking on a cell phone and you looked around, you got a bullet in your head.
Yeah. Is that a cell phone? Cell phone a deadly weapon?
Back then it was.
Yeah, well, you bet your ass it is.
In the march up, Mac, in 2003 when we invaded Iraq and we drove in there, because we weren't told this. Everybody kind of speculated. So we had happened, what had happened was a suicide V-bid drove into like
a bunch of
Army guys.
Explain what a suicide V-bid is.
A vehicle-borne IED, a vehicle-borne improvised explosive device. So they rig a car, they got a guy in it, he drives it, he either got a kill switch or he's got a crush switch, you know, something, a panic switch, something that'll trigger the explosion.
Okay.
So they drove this thing in there, boom, and it blew up. Well, remember the color of their taxis? They're white and orange.
Right.
So there was a Volo, a be on the lookout for vehicles that are red, orange and white because of the suicide V-bid attacks. So as we're driving up, the first orange and white cars we see, we light them up. Everything shoots at these things. Well, we realize later that, oh, shit. Okay, they canceled that last order because those are taxis. Well, how do you know? Well, because we just lit up two of them. They're full of people with luggage. You know, and so you learn. Can't do that. Okay, move on.
Yeah.
I mean, all sorts of shit.
That's, you know, and again, and everybody's trying their best, and you know, death is in the air, right? And everybody's a little bit tense, and then somebody tells you something, and you take it, and you just don't have enough experience. I mean, later on, I mean, probably the area that we made the most progress in is what is called escalation of force. So there's an insurgency that uses the people as cover to do what they do, and you're fighting them. So how do you do it without, quote, first do no harm, you know, and the way that the, you know, the division ultimately came is that you do your convoys at night when there's a curfew on. You try to stay off the road except for tactical operations, right? When you do come to a halt, there's signs in Arabic on the vehicles. There's concertina. There's spike strips. There's all this stuff put up, designed so that you don't have to shoot them. And even then, it didn't always work. You know, because sometimes people panic and the driver hits the gas. And really, to me, and I've said this before, but one of the biggest differences between Afghanistan and Iraq was the absence of the ever-present danger of suicide bombers that there was in Iraq. Every day when you did anything that involved going off of a firm base, you were in danger of getting, you know, blown up by somebody in any vehicle that would swerve into you and blow up. Yeah.
Dude, I've had, looking back, I remember seeing, you know, when they were used, small animals, a dog, a goat, a cow, it would blow up on me. You know, it was like, those dirty son of bitches, man. We had people, they had dead bodies rigged with explosives. As we get, you know, you'd go and look and boom! But other, the one that had explosives in, like, it was something small, like a dog. And it blew up on us. And it didn't cause any damage, you know, it didn't hurt anybody.
Right.
It just kind of stunned you. But I think the thing that pissed me off the most is you have this fragment of 3-day-old dog all over you. That kicked me off like no tomorrow.
Disgusting.
Oh my God. Yeah. Yeah, the dirty pool that they used to play.
Right. I remember out by Al-Qaim, and one of the first incidences that I remember of hearing about them using children, or they had they sent a kid out with a pigeon, and they said, hey, when their vehicle reaches this point, throw the pigeon up in the air. So here's this little kid
saying, I thought it was a bunch of pigeons. Release, open this door, and a bunch of pigeons would fly out.
The one I remember, I thought the kid was holding the pigeon. So you have this kid standing along the side of this road, and, you know, and the Marines are waving, and the vehicle gets to a certain point, and he fires, you know, he just throws the pigeon up in the air, and then he takes off running, and then, boom, this IED blows up. And you're like, those pieces of garbage. You know, and that's, and so to me, that there was this, and they were really good at it too. I mean, in retrospect.
Oh yeah, they used to do the kite.
Right.
They would fly kite. They did it numerous ways, but they'd fly kite. And then as soon as we would leave the firm base, they'd reel their kite in.
Yeah.
You saw the kite in the air, meant all clear.
Little kid playing.
Then as soon as you see the, little kid, then once the kite started going down towards the ground, meant that they just left. No kites, nothing.
And what this was, was it was all an attempt to use our own cultural restraints, our own rules of engagement against us. For instance,
shoot the kite, the kids.
So stopping. So during, when we have Fallujah surrounded, you know, ambulances are moving through the city. All of a sudden, we start stopping ambulances.
And there's arms and ammunition and bad guys and explosives.
RPGs,
I stopped one time. We stopped one on the road. And we opened the back end, and that thing was packed. Packed. You couldn't even put a nickel in there. Full of guns, bullets, ammunition. It's like, are you kidding me, boys and girls? This is what we're copying to. You have the crescent moon and the whole Red Cross thing going. And this is how okay.
So we're doing a snap VCP at a place called Nasser Wasalam, which is just west of Baghdad, between, like, in the vicinity of where Abu Ghraib was, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, just north of Mobile.
Yeah. Yeah, so on the north side of Mobile.
I forget what was the main drag that left? Was that Michigan that went all the way to
Yeah, Michigan left.
It came out ECP-1.
Yep.
Michigan came out ECP-1.
Yeah. Went over the Cloverleaf and then through Fallujah and then Hobonite.
And then Chicago was above that, right?
Chicago and Lincoln. Lincoln was like the more.
Yeah, we're above.
They dumped bodies up there like at the cyclic rate.
Yeah, Lincoln was over the bridge, right?
Right. By the Tartar Canal Road where the chicken farm was, where we used to have to go collect.
Yeah. The Tartar
we used to get shot at. He was like, speed up. Why? We're going over the Tartar.
but there was this chicken farm where, like, they thought there was, like, chemical weapons out there. And there'd be people out there. We got to go back to the chicken farm again. Not again. Yep. Got to go
back.
Well,
because what sucked about the Tartar was it made you go up high, so you're exposed to everything. I mean, everybody can shoot at you on the Tartar. I mean, it was like, that's crazy. That was the night. Who was the G4 for division? Sort of the B. Black?
No, John Broadmeadow.
No, it wasn't Broadmeadow. So
what?
Who was it?
Yes, it was.
It wasn't Broadmeadow. It was a bigger guy.
What year? 2006 or 2004?
2004.
It was
Broadmeadow. 2005.
Broadmeadow was
a little guy.
He was the four, though. Oh, you mean during the winter? After he left, probably.
Yeah. It was a new guy.
I don't know.
Tall guy, kind of big guy.
I can't remember.
So, here's a real quick story. This is, no one got really serious to her. But we were leaving the MEC camp in Fallujah and going back to Blue Diamond, or Camp Blue Diamond at Ramadi, right? So, we go out of the north, entry the vehicle control point on the north of the MEC, hit up on that dirt road, go between Bahariya, and then jump on the Cloverleaf, and then take Mobile north, right?
Right.
So then you go over the Tartar, and then you come in from the north side of Ramadi, you come down along the river, and then you enter Blue Diamond from the north side,
right.
And then Hurricane Point is right across the river, right, remember?
Right, along the beautiful Euphrates River.
Beautiful Euphrates River. So, one night, we were getting ready to leave, and I think it was the G6. No, because it was one of the G shops, and it wasn't the 3 or the 2. And he said, hey, I need to get to Ramadi. Do you mind if I add my vehicle to your convoy? And we had 4 vehicles, and we're like, yeah, no problem. Make sure your driver is in the brief, because we used to brief every time we go on it. Anytime you left the warrant, we went through a brief.
Right.
Needed actions, the route, call signs, what to do. We go through the whole thing. We role play it all out, right? And we'd always do the brief maybe 30 minutes before LD. Any questions? Then we go back to the vehicles, make sure all the frequencies are loaded, all the ammunition is up. We do gear checks. We do comm checks. We mount the vehicles 10 minutes prior, 5 minutes up. Everybody starts the engines, let them run. We're looking at fluid levels, temperature levels, and then we punch out. It was the way we did it all the time. And the reason we did it that way is because no one died. You know, everybody came home safely. Everybody knew what to do.
It's called discipline and being a professional. You don't take shortcuts.
Right. So we would, and again, we would go through every scenario. I mean, the brief took 30 minutes, you know, of maybe just going out the front, driving a mile down, and going into another compound. 30-minute brief. You know, what happens when Vehicle 3 goes down? We go through the towing procedures. Who pulls up security? What if it's Vehicle 2? Who pulls security then? What if it's Vehicle 1? I mean, we go through every possible scenario. So, anyway, that night, we take roll call. And the driver is there. And we look at him, and we immediately know this kid, maybe it's like his third time ever driving a Humvee. So I look over at one of my sergeants and I said, hey, after the brief, make sure you go back and do an inspection on his vehicle and make sure that everything is fine. We're going to tuck him in between, I think we had 4 vehicles going back that night. So we're going to tuck him in between 3 and 4. Right. So we're talking about it. He's going through everything, making sure, and a nightfall runs. We meet up, the vehicles are pre-positioned, we do the final checks. So each vehicle commander goes through his vehicle, and then my staff sergeant would go through everybody, and then I would go through and spot check to make sure everything else was done. So we're triple checking everything. And we get done, and we're sitting in the vehicles about 5 minutes prior, unbeknownst to us. And the way we were spaced out, because there was two other convoys that were leaving, so there was a lot of vehicles selected by the entrance to get ready to go.
Right.
And they changed vehicles out. The G4 or whoever it was didn't like that vehicle, and so he asked for another one, and they brought up another one, and they switched out like that.
Okay.
New driver.
Oops.
So, well, because the other vehicle was tripped out to that kid. Remember the way we used to do stupid things, right?
Right.
You sign your name, that's your vehicle. You can't cross-trip, you know, a vehicle out.
Right.
You know, it's not one of those things. So you, the guy that's been educated goes back to the motor pool with that vehicle. The new guy pulls up, sits in the convoy. No one's really sees this happen. I mean, my guys were busy with their own stuff. And we start off. And we're motoring down. Everybody's on knock. You know, night vision. We're steering clear. Everybody's blacked out. There's no white light. So it's, you know, you're driving. It's kind of crazy. You're driving maybe, you got maybe 30 feet, 40 feet in front of you is the next vehicle. No lights, pitch black, and you're on night vision, and you're doing about 45, 50 miles an hour down the freeway. Right? And if you've never done that before, driven high speed, close proximity in an urban area in a vehicle in combat, that's a new experience.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm comfortable. I'm just like sitting in the passenger seat with my driver, and all of a sudden I hear on the radio IED, and they said number 4, which was our support vehicle, the guys that we were escorting. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, are you kidding me? We 1, 2, and 3 miss this ID, and our guys that were supporting hits it. And I'm like, and we're on the Tartar Canal. So we're up high. We dismount. I go running back to see it. And I see, do my nods, I see all the smoke and steam. You know, it looks reminiscent of an ID. There's radiator steam and all this shit coming up. But I didn't hear the explosion. And so I ran back there. And we're pulling the drive. The fourth vehicle is already doing security. The one of the guys from there is coming back, and we're pulling some of the wounded out. And I look at him, and I, you know, the G4 or whatever he was. I said, "You okay?" He's like, "Yeah, I'm fine. I just got whiplash, you know, hit 4. And I said, "What happened?" And he goes, "I don't know." Next minute I'm driving, when I see in the vehicle, next thing I knew, the vehicle got hit. We exploded. And I'm like, wow, you know, shit. And I look at the front of the vehicle, and there's an Alaska barrier right inside the engine block. Like, he T-boned it. Not flat end, but skinny end. Right? Boom. Right through the middle of the engine. Because right at the Tartar, they had a separation of the freeway. It had Alaska barriers right down the middle as another lane, to make another lane.
They were between the east and westbound lanes, or they were between?
No, it was on the northbound lane, the north side, so okay. That would have been the westbound lane.
Westbound lane, yeah.
So what they did was they separated those two lanes into two lanes, and they put an Alaska barrier, because they used to have, that's where the off-ramp used to go down the hill to the right.
Okay.
So, and I guess they did it to keep people from staying in the off ramp and then coming back on and cutting in front, whatever.
Okay. Right.
But he hit this thing. So I realized, I'm looking at it going, this ain't an IED. He hit the damn Alaska barrier. And I'm looking at him, and I go up to him, and we're talking to him, and he's got some trauma. He smashed his face into the steering wheel. And I look at his helmet, and I notice he doesn't have night vision goggles on his helmet. So I go back into the truck, and I look in his truck, and I notice there's not night vision goggles that would have flown off into the front. I'm looking, and I ask him, Lance Corporal, you okay?
Oh, yes, sir. Okay, sir.
Where's your night vision goggles?
I don't have a set, sir.
Okay. So I go back to the colonel and I said, hey, your driver hit the last comparator because he didn't have night vision goggles. And then I get the, what? We told him to bring, you know, then we didn't find out until much later that they changed up the vehicles and all this stuff. But it was a testimony to, again, like, oh my God, just how things could get sideways so quick.
The simplest thing.
You know?
The simplest thing.
Oh.
Right?
You know, so this kid, he'd been driving for the last 15 minutes in total blackness without seeing a thing.
Which is a miracle.
I don't know how he even got that far. Yeah.
How did he get? How's he get off the base even, right? Because you got to go through this complex obstacle turning left and right. How he does it with, and again, so you hear Mike talk about the process you go through because you live through this shit. And then what happens is once that happens and you're sitting there, right, you can hear the stopwatch ticking in your head. Because you're going to be sitting here for only how long, Mike, before something else bad happens?
Oh, yeah, minutes. You got to get out of it. But the process, though, Mac, would be a lot more because, you know, we have a mission. And we're going to go out to do whatever, X, at the ISAF place out in, you know, Egypt.
Wherever.
Way out there. So you got to find this place. No one knows where it is. No one's ever been there. So you're in the douche shop pulling up imagery. You find it. Then you're looking at the route, and then you go to what was the Motor T guys that did all the route clearance stuff?
UMCC.
Yeah, so you go to UMCC, and you would look up all these routes, and then you'd ask, pull up all the information on this route for the last 24 hours. And most of the time when we go, like, what's this route called? Oh, this is Route Tornado. I've never heard of it. Neither we. No one has ever driven on it.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, so I'm going to be the first guy? Yeah.
Yep.
We're looking forward to you, actually, if you make it. Oh, okay. You know, and you're like, hey, is the road under construction? Is there potholes, whatever? You know, see, a lot of it you don't know. Or if it's cross-boundary of another unit, now you got to do the coordination. Hey, we're looking at coming into your battle space. I'm going to have these many vehicles. We're going to be on this route. Our guns are going to be orientated this direction. You know, what's your communication? What's your frequencies? What's your signal plan? What's your passwords? Your brevity? You know, all of this stuff, you're passing this information. And then as you cross out of his boundary, you go into somebody else's boundary, then you got to do the whole thing again. So just in some cases, you know, it takes a whole day to plan a 2-hour drive.
And then, the coordination, like, well, why is that important? Okay, so if they get hit, first off, they have vehicles that break down and you need to recover them and stuff like that. Somebody's got to go out there and get them. If they get hit and they need QRF support, quick reaction force support, where is that coming from? And everybody's got to be on the same sheet of music. And if you don't do that, that's how people get dead. And that's how and if you're the one that's responsible, and if you didn't do the coordination, you live with that. You own that. And nobody can rescue you from it.
That's how I fired up I ordered my lead vehicle to fire on a U.S. Army Humvee one time. And didn't know about it until later on. But we were going down one road. He was coming down the other. It was our battle space. They never coordinated with anybody. No one knew that they were passing through our battle space. They thought, because they'd done it all the time. They're just going to clip right through our space, not going to be no one the wiser. And they used to travel, back then, they used to travel in one-vehicle convoys. They didn't have to have two. As long as they had two people in the vehicle, they were fine. Where our rule was you had to have two, a minimum, I think, two, maybe even three vehicles in every convoy.
I think it was three. Minimum three.
Yeah, I think it was three, too. But the Army could travel with one. And then they did away with that because that was shortly after that that Army Humvee patrol. Those guys got whacked by the river, and one of them was taken. And I don't know if they ever found them.
Yeah, they found them.
And,
they found them. They couldn't identify them, but they found them in that in that hydroelectric plant down by the river.
So this guy was driving through our battle space. We're going one way. He's coming the other. And he's on blackout. I mean, he has no lights on. and he doesn't even have his blackout drive on. So, you know, you
explain what blackout drive is, Denver.
Blackout drive is a switch on your thing that emit a small amount of light on the left side of your Humvee. So it's like a telltale sign. If you see a vehicle and you see this little rectangle light emitting from the left side of a vehicle, you kind of get an assurance that that's a Humvee coming towards you with blackout on.
And you can only see it.
And it's on the right hand side from the rear. Right. And you can only see it with night vision on because the light's so faint. Or you're right up on it looking into it. You know, you can then see it. But from a distance with nods, you'd see this little light rectangle emitting from the right front or the right rear of the vehicle. So this night we're driving down pitch black, going down, flat road way out. My gunner up top picks up a vehicle coming towards us head on, not in the other lane. So he's in our lane. And the lane is separate. There's a freeway divider between us.
Okay.
You know, so the eastbound or the westbound, because we're going eastbound this time, the westbound lane is, you know, separate. This guy is in our lane and he's heading towards us. So I'm like, hey, slow down a little bit because maybe he's going to, and I'm looking and now I can see him, no light, no blackout. And I'm looking at my gunner and I said, can you identify it? And he goes, no, sir, I can't identify it. I said, does it look like a Humvee? No, sir, I don't see a turret on. It looks smooth. Looks like it's just a regular car. Because just about every Humvee on the road back then had a turret of some sort.
Right.
So as it's getting closer and closer and it's not slowing down, I tell my guy, I kind of break and I tell him, flash him with the white light. You know, so we do flash him, boom, 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 twice with the white light. No response. Still the same rate of speed. So I tell my gunner, I say, hey, go condition one and give him a burst in the hood. So he does. That 240 flies. And I hear about maybe 6 or 7 rounds go downrange. And I see the tracers, and I see the tracers impact the vehicle. Vehicle comes to a screeching stop. So now I'm racing forward and we're getting ready to get into a gunfight, man. We're ready to kill these guys because we don't know what's going on. We slam on the brakes and we do the bailout and I got my weapon at the low ready and I'm running up and I'm on nods. I notice they're army. Cause I could see all the little, glow in the dark tab shit that they got on their uniform. So, you know, I yell out to them, U.S. Marines, you know, so we talk of it and this staff sergeant, is so pissed. I mean, I would be kind of mad too. I mean, shit, I just got my vehicle lit up by a friendly. And so he goes, oh, that hell just shot. You know, I'm like, calm down. I did. You're lucky you're not dead. And so, you know, we start talking and it's the conversation spins to like, what are you doing here? Well, sir, we're supposed to come through here and we come through here just about every week once, you know, but I said, okay, I've already talked to my UMCC. I've already talked to my 3 back there. No one knows who you are or why you're even coming through our battle space. For all we know, you could be out there just gallivanting around the countryside. And so it turns into, hey, let's do this then. Let's go back with me, report this, you know, and let's get, no, oh, sir, no, that's okay. My lieutenant's actually coming out here. He's got a Raptor. So they do. They Raptor comes in. We do this stuff and we pull it. And everybody kind of, but the lieutenant is like, hey, we're good, right? No one, you know, we don't have to really, we're done with this. We can let it go. We don't have to go any further than this. I'm like, oh, I'm going back and I'm going to find out what happened. I mean, this is a blue on blue, man. It's a big deal. Oh, no. My guys were wrong. They shouldn't have been here. Let's just drop, you know. No. These guys, no. Oh, please, man.
Going away like this.
Dude, listen up. Hey, dude, what do you, just name the price, man. Please just make it go away. But he was trying, I mean, he was so hard, like, oh, no. It's good. We're good. Everything's clear. We're good. My guys with the ball. You know, and I kept going, no. I want to find out what, no. We're good. So, I think I would have pressed him 2 more minutes. That's what I got. All right, man, just name the price. $10,000, $20,000. What will it be? make it go away.
And it's not his fault. He's working for people that allow them to work like that and to be sloppy. And, you know, when we first got there in 2004, we would have army convoys come flying into firm bases.
Yeah.
And you'd be like, what's going on? And here's this poor specialist with his M16 and an Iridium phone, and like, there's three more trucks out on the interstate. They're getting ambushed. Like, what? And we had no visibility.
Yeah, they would leave them behind.
Right.
They'd leave them behind.
And so then we're QRFing. We're going out there and finding whatever we find. And it was horrible. And the Army just wasn't as crazy as we were. I mean, the story that Mike talking about the Humvee is I think happened in 2006. He's with 3-5.
Yeah.
I'm running the 5th Marine COC, and we get a call saying that there's two Army soldiers that are MIA. We're like, what? Like, we'll empty Camp Fallujah to go look for them. Like, because we shared a border with them. And I want to say it was like first squadron of the 7th Cavalry or some shit like that. And so,
they were infantry guys, which was really kind of surprising.
Right. And so what happened was they had put a single vehicle on the far side of a canal as an OP to watch something. And
with two dudes in it.
Two dudes. Actually, there was three. There's three dudes in it. And so they, 2 days before, the shitheads who constantly watch everything we do, they shot at a vehicle that was in the vicinity, not at the OP, the vehicle OP, but a vehicle that was moving to see, and they shot and they stopped the vehicle because they wanted to see where the QRF was coming from. They saw which firm base was supporting with the QRF. 2 days later, they attacked the OP. They have an ambush set up for the QRF that never gets there. One soldier's killed in the vehicle. One is killed while he's being drug away, and a third one is drug away.
Right.
And so this guy calls me, and he says, "Sir, we have two soldiers that are MIA." And I said, "MIA, what are you fucking talking about?" And he said, "Well, we had a single vehicle on an OP." And I said, "What?" I said, "No."
Yeah.
And then I started I said, "Okay, what do you need from us?
Who you're talking to?"
Right. So we get on the blower with 3-5. "Hey, you got to put snap VCPs along Route San Juan and around on Route Iron, and everything gets stopped. Nothing goes through. There's a soldier that's missing." And then I got interested, like, what happened? And so I called them and I said, "Hey, when you guys put something together, will you forward it to me?" And he said, "No problem." And he did. And it was horrible because these guys, it was unprofessional as fuck. And these guys died and just sucks. And so, you know, I'll say this, Marine Corps is filled with intense, you know, good, a lot of good people. And in 2004, we did some good shit. And the creation of the UMCC, which was the Uniform Movement Control Center, I think that's what it was. I think that's what the UMCC.
Something like that. But that was fantastic.
Yeah. And it's scheduled. And if there was like three convoys moving in towards the same direction, they would consolidate them. So you'd be heavier. You'd be off the road during the day. You'd wait till curfew and then you'd move at night. And our escalation of force.
They would track trends on those routes. They would send the information across the battle space. It was just like air traffic control, but on the ground.
And you know what? That's exactly what it was. And then, so, for instance, if they were moving through 3-5's battle space, you know, you do these briefs, turnover briefs every day, and the UMCC guy stands up and briefs. Here's the tactical convoys we have going tonight. And it'd be shit like this. We have a 30 vehicle convoy moving 450 Iraqi soldiers. It's going from Habaniya, where they graduated from, to their division in Baghdad. They'll be moving through Fallujah at this time. You know, blah 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 blah. 3-5 has been notified. Who was in the city? 125. Somebody. They're from Boston. Reservists. Those guys. They've been notified.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to lock down Route Michigan. You know, as they move through. I mean, it was real serious shit. But you had other units that wouldn't pay attention to that stuff, and you just looked at them like, you're amateurs over here, and it's you get people killed. It's sucked. The so no, but a little glimpse of you know of life. And again, that's every day with that kind of intensity, and that's why when you come home, you know you could take like a 2-week nap, not because you're physically.
Well, that's why,
right?
And also not just physically, but that's why I'm not that way anymore. I don't, you know, people. Some people have made the comments of like, man, I just can't imagine, you know, I didn't know you as a Marine, but I just can't see you being that intense or that kind of thing. And I'm like, because I don't want to be that. I mean, the problem is, it's like being hooked on crack, I guess. It's a magnificent feeling. Let me get, don't ever let anything tell you, but being on the natural dopamine high, you know, for 10, 20 days straight in combat is, there's nothing that feels greater. I mean, you're challenged with those type of, that kind of lifestyle where you're living just like bam, 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 and everything's regimented, and everything's planned out, and everything's detailed, and everything, you're going through all these critical decisions. It is fantastic.
The intensity.
You know?
Yeah.
But living like that takes a toll, man. Like you said. I used to come home, when I come back from deployment, and there were times where I'd go to sleep like a Friday night and wake up like Sunday evening.
Mike said, it takes a toll, because
like,
what you have
like,
in
the whole weekend away, she's like, you needed it.
What you have in your head is, and the reason for all that intensity is, I'm not going to put my head on the pillow and have to have visions that I didn't take care of my Marines, my sailors, my soldiers, and have to live with that forever. Fuck that. Well, I have a job here, and it's a serious job, and it requires this kind of intensity. I was waiting for you to say that you found out that the four vehicle had gotten swapped, and you said, hey, you're not going with us, which is what would have happened, and the four throw a fit.
We didn't know. There was some ass chewing. You know, my fourth vehicle, because fourth vehicle is mine, third vehicle is theirs. You know, and I remember talking to, he was a sergeant from the regiment, and I can't remember his name, but I remember, you know, going off on him saying, what the hell? Right. How come you didn't see? And he's like, sure. You know, we had this vehicle, because they did. They had, I think, three sticks getting ready to leave. And we were scheduled to leave like in the middle or maybe the third one to leave. And you had to have separation because you didn't want to get bunched up, right?
Right.
So then I kind of thought about it and understood, okay, I can see where that one comes. But, you know, it's not my guy's problem. It's your own problem that you're an 06 colonel and you decide you don't want to drive that Humvee. You might want to let somebody know.
Well, and the other thing is, it's not like you don't know the rules. Right. If you don't go if you don't go to the brief, you don't go.
Well, yeah, I actually booted, you know, remember old loud JC Coleman?
Yeah.
He was the chief, right? Was he the chief or the, yeah.
He's the chief of staff of the MEF.
Yeah. So JC, I like JC, man. I mean, he was a loud,
pissed off,
person,
loud,
but,
and mean.
Oh, but if you knew him, you knew he didn't mean it, right? That's the way he. That was his shtick. It was his thing. So, I'll never forget, man. It was, I think, I don't know if it was Jerry Durant or maybe it was Stu. I think it was Stu because we spent a lot of time more at the MEF when Stu got there. Jerry didn't want to spend any time at the MEF. So Jerry just like gets shot at. So we were there and we were going to take, Colonel Coleman out with us to this one visit or some meeting in Baghdad. And I told him, I said, make sure you're here for the brief. No one gets a pass. And he looked at me because he knew me and he's like, yeah, bullshit. I'm the chief staff. You know, and I knew he was thinking. So anyway, he didn't show for the meeting. And so I saw him later that night because we were getting ready to punch like it. We were real late.
Right.
And, I said, hey, sir, just here to inform you that, I scrubbed your name off the list. you're going to have to find another way to get to Baghdad. And he looked at me, and he goes, Hunter, I'm not in the mood for jokes right now. And I said, I ain't joking, sir. You didn't make my brief, you ain't going. And who was, it wasn't, Sally was Matt. Who was his deputy? Was it Neller?
It was Neller in 2006, but you're talking 2004. And his deputy, Conway?
No, it wasn't Conway.
No. Conway.
Who was the black guy?
Conway was the MFCG, so.
Was it Timberlake?
No, Timberlake was a lieutenant colonel then.
Oh.
Deputy Meth Commander?
Yeah. He was an air winger guy.
I thought it was Halick. I didn't think it was a black.
Oh, no, you're right. It was Dennis. Dennis Halick. Yeah.
Who's a great
guy.
So
you're right. Sweet stat. So General Halick was in the corner, and he was kind of listening to this, Coleman, and I didn't know Halick was behind me, and Coleman looked at me and goes, you know, you're joking me, right? And I said, no, sir, you're seriously off the list. That was the rules. And I'm just following the way things are supposed to be. No one gets a pass. And he looked at me, and General Halick goes, you know, kind of turned around and said, good job, Gunner. Don't let that piece of shit, you know, try and bully you. Just start going up on him. But I'll never forget, man. But he went with us.
He did?
Yeah, we made an exception for him. I mean.
I was going to say. Because sometimes people wouldn't. And you were within her.
I didn't want to live the rest of my life with J.C. Coleman pissed off at me.
Because, you know, there's some people. There's some
right?
people that won't take it out on you, but I'm not like that. I'll even a score. Mike's not like that. And Colonel Coleman wasn't like that. He would take it out on your ass. Interesting. My Nasser Wasalam story was they put a snap VCP, and this is under the guise of like the using ambulances and shit like that they would do. So we had a female, and in 2006, you know, there was more females that would be work with units, and we specifically would search women, which we never did. And we were looking for a guy named Zarqawi at the time in the AO, and he was rumored to be all over the place. And I didn't know this, but the intelligence on the DART side was that, hey, very closely held, he's masquerading as a woman. So we get these, you know, these female Marines, and so we go, and so they throw a snap VCP down, which is unscheduled, and in an area, you just put down these checkpoints, and you start searching people. And we used to yoke up people out of these things. It was probably the best thing we ever did, in terms of finding people.
Yeah.
And so they're like, yeah, the woman needs to go over there. And they're like, what? Like, the woman needs to go over there. No, you cannot, you know our culture, you cannot search our women. Yeah, she's getting searched. And the guy throws
it. Yeah, she's getting it.
They find like 200 blasting caps taped to this woman's body. She was a one person ammo dump going to supply somebody's IED cell. And that's kind of shit. That's just the world that you lived in Iraq. And like I said,
they thought that we were. They thought we were stupid a lot, you know. So
we were.
You pull over a mint condition 2004 black BMW with all leather interior back there and by Camp Smitty in the back hinterlands, and you know, three shaven, clean, wearing cologne Iraqis would be in there going, "Oh, we're coming to visit my aunt." You're like, "Yeah." Okay, get out of the car, jackass.
And say goodbye to it because it won't be here in 4 minutes.
Yeah. We had an impound lot. I don't know if you ever saw our impound lot at Habania. Did you ever see the impound lot by the airfield?
No, not at Habania. No, I did see the Habania one. There was some interesting shit in the impound lot, though.
So. Yeah, we had an impound lot in Habania, and that's where we used to do, like, weapons testing on cars. Like, oh. That's why I did the M203 weapons test for General Miller in the windshield of the car, Albania.
Hey, do you remember?
But we had a race, but we had a, it was almost like a, it was an airfield in Habania where the paladins used to be.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And then we had magazines, in, like a magazine in the north side of the airfield that was built into the, and it was a huge, we used it as the garage later on, but Habania was kind of a fun place to be. I mean, we used to race up and down with the impound cars on our free time. We go fishing in the Euphrates River right behind us.
Right behind.
Shot the hyena back there on the river.
Do you remember we're in Afghanistan, and across the Helmand River and to the south, I can't remember what the firm base's name was, but
Habania to the south.
No. This is in Afghanistan, across the Helmand River on the far side of the river, south in the southern part of our AO. There's a firm base there.
Cottage Castle.
They're doing road work on it. And this car goes, there's a bolo out on a white opal, which is always what it was, white opal. It was a white Toyota pickup truck. And, I take that back. This car is driving crazy. This truck's driving crazy, and they're trying to wave it down, and it goes around them. And then the Afghans that are doing the road work, they get out with their Kalashnikovs. It blows through the Marines, and they shoot, and it just kept going. And then the Afghans, they hear it. It comes over this little bridge over a rise, and then here they're doing the road work, and they all have their Kalashnikovs. And so they shoot the vehicle up, and they kill the driver. So the vehicle gets impounded. And now our communication people, spooky people that listen to stuff, they start listening. And so a few days later, we're getting reports of, like, the Americans have the vehicle. Right? Like, they have our vehicle. And so it took them a day or two to develop the whole thing. So then we get this message. Hey, does anybody have a white pickup truck? And then like a day later, I can't remember which battalion says, yeah, we shot one of those up the other day. Why? What's in it? We think it's full of cash and black tar opium. And so they're like, well, our Marines have been driving it. They've been driving it down at the firm base. Yeah. And they're like, ask them to start pulling it apart. Mike, and do you remember this? Because this thing...
That was LAR, though.
No, it was us. This thing was... I mean, Mike, if you could see the stuff that they would do to vehicles so that they could put cash and black tar opium in the sidewalls, in the engine compartment, in the air conditioning, in the seats, create a false floor on the bed of the pickup truck, and everything under the false floor is black tar opium.
Same thing you see, same thing that Border Patrol sees in, you know, coming across the border in Mexico. I mean, same thing you can look up.
And these Marines start,
same technique.
These Marines start pulling it. Everything they pull apart has either cash or black tar opium in it.
We burned 10,000 pounds of black tar, heroin and morphine and opium at Dwyer. Me, the judge, who was the big tall lieutenant colonel, the bald headed dude, really funny.
I was going to say the two, but he's not funny.
No. It was our Jack. It was the lieutenant colonel. He was the reserve lieutenant, the lawyer.
Yeah, he's from L.A.
He had bald head.
Yeah, he's a good dude, smart guy. He's
really,
good, yeah.
Really funny. And him and his, like, dude, his alpha was that captain. Really funny guy, too.
Yeah, they were good.
They were really good. They had really good humor. But we had dug a big hole. Because he came to me and said, hey, Gunner. He always had really crazy shit, you know, like, hey, Gunner, what do you think about, is it possible to dig a hole? Because he always come to me because he knew if he sparked my interest, we would do it. We were doing it, right? We were doing it. And the air guys were the same way. Hey, Gunner, do you think it's possible that we can do a validation of the Griffin missile out of the C-1? We got it. Yeah, let's do this. You know? But I always had to like, hey, yeah, we do this. I get to fly in the bird. Be on the tail ramp of the when we're shooting these missiles out.
It'll be awesome.
That was my story.
It'll be awesome, yeah.
That was my story of being in Harvest Hof during the week. Hey, you guys, we're going to Sangin? What? You know? And so anyway, the lawyer's like, hey, do you think we could burn a bunch of opium on base? And I said, yeah, shit, yeah, let's burn it. And I go, how much are we talking about? And he's like, like 10,000 pounds. I said, well, how much, how big is that? And he's, you know, he's like, you know, it's like 4 7-tons full of, you know, and I'm like, oh, well. So we got the big bulldozer out there and we dug a big hole on the other side of the runway. And we put all these pallets down and we started stacking these drugs. And they were like in freaking big ass sandbags, big burlap bags. And they were heavy, dude, like 40, 50 pounds per bag. And we're stacking the shit, and we're stacking the shit, and we're stacking it. It's like 5 high now. Finally, we're done. And I have 3 thermite grenades. We didn't really think this one through. I have 3 thermite grenades. And we had a bunch of gas with us. So we poured the gas, the diesel and some other gas, all over everything. And then I gave it to one of the young Marines that helped, you know, volunteer. I said, there you go. If you're using thermite, no. Pull the pin. Put it on top. Don't toss it. Just place it on top. So he does. And it starts up. And it starts to burn. And it's going, like, raging now. And it's like burning plastic. It's black smoke. You know? And it is bad. Well, unbeknownst to me, and I wasn't even thinking about it, when you burn morphine, heroin, black tar, and you're downwind of that stuff.
Yeah.
And your skin starts to tingle. The voices start, you know, you're like, whoa, what's happening? And a bunch of, I mean, literally, like, we all started feeling at once, like, hey, I think we need to get out of here. Like, yeah, it's like, whoa. Before we can't even get out, like, drive, we need to get out of here. One of the young Marines was like, sir, this is so weird. I can't even feel my fingertips. So, and he's like touching his, he's like doing, you know, the little thumb dance with his fingers. Like, sir, I can't even feel this right now. This is so weird. Like, yeah, just relax. You'll be fine. You'll be fine.
That's funny.
I was driving back with the same thing. Like, and I feel kind of messed up right now.
They'd find marijuana fields and stuff like that. They'd set them on fire.
Opium. Like, we burn all the opium fields. Yeah. Poppy.
Yeah. All right. What plans you have for the weekend? You doing anything significant or what?
No, the wife took the day off.
Oh, really?
So her and the mother-in-law. Well, they went down to Waco, Texas.
Not Waco? Why? What's in Waco? Oh, is her sister down there?
No. So there's a place called Magnolia Farms. Okay. Don't ask me what it is.
What is it?
I don't know. Magnolia Farms.
What is it?
In Waco, Texas. I don't know. But her mom wanted to go there. And I think it's just like a grocery store. I don't know. Again, I don't know why. But my wife felt so bad that she never got the opportunity to go. So she took the day off. And so I get this text last night. It's so funny. And so this is the total setup, right? It's like 6 o'clock or, cause I was with the Granbury Police Department last night doing some training stuff. And then, so I get this yesterday at 7:26 a.m. Sorry, it wasn't the p.m. I'm taking tomorrow off to take my mom to Magnolia Farms in Waco. It would have been my parents' 55th anniversary tomorrow. Okay. My mom has wanted to go to Magnolia Farms every time she comes here, but we never get the time. I was wondering if you wanted to come with us. So I ignored that text as long as I could. So last night when I got home late, my wife was already in bed, which I thought. So I'm sitting out here and she comes walking out. It's like 9:30, 10. And I said, oh, I thought you were asleep. She's like, I was, but you were making a little bit of noise. And I said, okay. She goes, hey, did you read my text this morning? And I'm like, shit. I said, which text? You know, and of course she's spot on. She's like, I only text you once, idiot. And I said, oh, about the one going to Magnolia Farm? She's like, yeah. And I said, yeah, I got it. She goes, so are you going to go with us or not? And then I said, no, I got to be on the radio with Matt. So that was, you know, she looks at me, kind of gives me that smirk, like, that's all you got? You
that's
know, like,
all you
really?
Got.
And I said, it's a planned out show. This is a big show tomorrow.
Yeah. Memorial Day is coming up. You know? He needs
yeah,
me.
Yeah, we got it. Yeah. But she looked at me and she goes, you're using Mac as your scapegoat. All the time, babe. All the time. All the time. But, yeah, so it's like an hour and a half, or hour and 45 minutes.
What's there?
Huh?
What is there, though? I don't understand what's there.
I don't know either. I'll look it up later, but it's called Magnolia Farm, and it's in Waco, Texas.
Hold on.
Magnolia Farms, Waco. Wow. Magnolia Farms, Waco, Texas. It is at the Silos. What is this?
Magnolia Market at the Silos.
Yeah.
How to plan a perfect trip to Magnolia Market in Waco, Texas. This is on TripAdvisor. I don't understand.
Yeah, so I guess it's a big deal.
Why people will line up around the block to be shuffled through this place. shuffled through this place when you can buy online. Save yourself the trip. Time waiting in line, rude police, that patrol, the parking lots, and just go to the website. Maybe in a few years or at the right time of the month, day, that is not an issue. And I will say I love what they have to offer, but I'm not the type that enjoys being herded like cattle. Next review. Amazing. Such a cool complex and exciting to see something we are all so familiar from TV and other media. Such a fun stop.
Oh, it's on TV?
Yeah. I don't know, like Magnolia Market at the Silo. Photos, reviews,
yeah.
What to do, Magnolia Market. All right, hold on one second. I'll explain it to you. This is a girl thing. All the Chip and Joanna approved things that you can do in Waco, Texas. And this is one of them. In just 2 years, Chip and Joanna Gaines' popularity has transformed the city into a must-see destination for fixer-uppers, blah, 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 blah. Thanks in large part to Magnolia Market and Silos, which has in turn boosted revenues for hotels and businesses. To think we've even had a small piece of play in that is what's keeping us going. Here, all the Waco destinations endorsed and owned by Chip and Joe. So I don't.
So they're on a TV show.
Yeah, so I guess it's something out of a TV show that... woman sues Magnolia Market for head injury. That's probably not what we're looking for.
There you go.
So
it's a good thing I didn't go.
Yeah, I don't think you would not have been. I don't think Magnolia good. Market at the Silos grand opening October 30-31. Magnolia Market at the VIP tickets? I don't understand. Include meeting fixer upper hosts Chip and Joanna Gaines. There's a band that was going to perform there. So, I don't
even know who this Chip and Joanne Gaines are. They must be TV reality people or something.
Yeah, you would not have been happy. Do you and your mother-in-law get along?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Okay. All right. But you talk a lot about... What?
She's been here for 5 weeks.
Wait.
Yeah.
It sounded like you just said your mother-in-law has been there for 5 weeks.
Yes.
I don't look, and take mother-in-law out of there. Any human, human being or animal for 5 weeks, that's like three weeks too much.
Oh, it's like 4 weeks in a day and 6 days too long.
The Red Sox are releasing. Who's the first baseman? Ramirez. What's his first name?
Yeah, Ramirez. I saw that, man. I'm not too happy with that decision.
Hanley Ramirez. In order to activate...
I need to talk to him about that.
Dustin Pedroia.
Yep.
He's been playing pretty well, hasn't he?
Who, Pedroia?
No, Ramirez.
Oh, Ramirez? Yeah, he's been playing. I'd say take a chance on Pedroia.
Yeah, Pedroia's been hurt. He's coming back after, what, knee surgery?
Yeah, I mean, I get it, man. Pedroia, when Pedroia was at his best, you know, man, that Big Poppy and Pedroia and all those guys, man, he was they didn't get any better.
Yeah, he's broke now. He's old and broke. But
yeah, he's older. He's broken. I mean, yeah, he's a good ball player, but jeez, man, he's just not going to have that snap, that elasticity that you need, you know?
Yeah, he's not. He's not that guy anymore. And well, it'll be interesting to see if he can get it back. But he's kind of a legacy guy, though. What do? You tell Dustin Pedroia to go home? Sorry, bro.
Yeah, that's tough, man.
Can't use you anymore. He's been like the soul of that team for a long time. So Henley Ramirez, though, pays a price. It's amazing they couldn't send anybody else down or make any other move other than this. So kind of interesting. Anyway, all right. So you're hanging out over the course of the weekend?
Yeah. Tomorrow's the last day. It's like I can breathe freely.
All right. And then you're hanging out. All right, man. Well, first of all, have a good one. Thanks for the visit.
Yeah. I'll talk to you Tuesday, right?
Tuesday. That's right. Duffy coming on the hour before you do.
I'll maybe come on and listen to him.
All right. I'll talk to you. Thanks, Mike.
All right. Yeah, I'll talk to you.
And there you have it. Michael Musselman. All right, this is the optional listening portion of the program. Thanks for listening here on an extended version. Gunner being Chatty Cathy today. Let me read you an email. It's amazing listening to you guys talk. Things that you take for granted, like a convoy going someplace, you don't really realize all the coordination that it would take to make that happen, to have it tied in so that if it does make contact, that thing gets squashed right now. One can understand the intensity and the fatigue that people come home with. Just burnt out, if that's what you're doing on a regular basis. Really interesting to listen to all those little micro details you guys talk about. And that is simply a day or an event. And that goes on multiple times a day for individuals and lots of times for a unit. The intensity piece, though, pretty interesting. Yeah, it is the intensity piece. And it's driven by your sense of responsibility for your Marines, your devotion to them. And then just as a leader, you know, you don't want to be, you know, a leader that doesn't do his job and that allows things to happen and bad things happen. And then you have to live with it. And you see it happen to other people and you resolve like, that ain't happening. I'm not having that. And so you get things tight. I will say we had. I was fortunate, and I think if you talk to Marines, just working with really good people, and then the people that weren't good got relieved pretty quickly, and so it was pretty motivating when you see that when you know people are incompetent. A lot of times in the military, you know, they're just allowed to. But I will tell you this: not in the 1st Marine Division. You know, under General Mattis, their asses got relieved. And better people got into those spots, and that's part of it. That's important. So interesting way to live your life for a little bit. So anyway, all right. I said this is the optional portion. So if you don't want to listen to Eternal Father, and the ceremonial version of the Marine hymn. And Taps, along with a 21 gun salute, you can exit the premises now. I would tell you that on the tail end of all of that, you'll hear the motivational version that we play in the first part of the show of the Marine Sim, and we'll go into Memorial Day like that. I will say this. Remember, Memorial Day weekend is not for us, right? It's for the rest of the population, okay? We do Memorial Day 365 days a year. You know, it's just, it comes with the turf. And so, but it is our responsibility to teach, to be evangelists about the weekend, and so that young people in particular can understand that this country is the way it is because people have sacrificed, and that they do owe something to this country, and then what they owe is their service in their community to make it a better place. That's what they owe the young people in particular that are in national cemeteries all over this country, whose life goal was not never to be in a national cemetery. So, again, have a great Memorial Day weekend. This is dedicated to all the heroes who marched towards the sound of guns, put their own fear aside, and went and picked up a weapon and headed towards a conflict. So to all of them, this is dedicated to them, and in particular this year, their families, their extended Gold Star families, who have every year borne the pain of missing them, of not having them at their barbecue, not having them at the lake house, not having them at the beach, not having them at the ball game. So we remember them, and we honor them and know, want them to know that they're incredibly important to our culture, to our tribe. So with that said, have a great weekend. That'll do it on a Friday. Have a great weekend. For those of you that are headed, that are in Southern California, if you're headed to the dedication of the 5th Marine Vietnam War Memorial, I will see you there. But you know what? I don't know how this got into my head, but I was thinking, you know, we play Eternal Father and the ceremonial version of the hymn and, would that be the way I wanted it to end? No, man. I want people to be, you know, to be motivated. So, an encore edition. Have a great weekend. On a Friday, All Marine Radio. Out.